morelikeradio.com. It's our duty to entertain you. I said duty.
Listening to That Awful Podcast on morelikeradio.com. Glad you could all join us. Episode number 2. And you guys thought it wasn't going to last. Recording this on a Saturday night, so you guys can listen to it on Monday. And whatever day you're really listening to it, you may download it, listen to it on a Wednesday. What do I know? I don't. But just getting back in from a wedding. I've had a pretty busy weekend so far. My wife's birthday was earlier this week, so we went out on Friday night, had a pretty late dinner, went out to a bar afterwards. She was trying to convince me to do a little karaoke. Unfortunately, I couldn't carry a tune if you put it in a suitcase. Although I got decent flow. I could do old school hip hop, and some of my friends will attest to that. As I, in my younger days, used to go to the bar after work and do a little karaoke. When we were drinking, and it was all mainly because we found the karaoke trick to be hot. Had a good time with that. Brings back a lot of good memories. We had a lot of good times doing that. We'd all get absolutely lit. And, I don't want to say absolutely lit, but we tie one on and have a good time and sing and act like a bunch of idiots. And we actually had a little bit of a cult following where, doctors and nurses and PA students would come out and hang out with us and enjoy themselves and made some friends and things like that. But we're not here to talk about my past. We're here to talk about what's happened in the past week. So, of course, for those of you who've been following football, and let's face it, at this point, who isn't following football? The Super Bowl's in a couple of days now. Pretty intense couple of days in, not really a couple of days, but pretty intense couple of games, this past Sunday would have been the Pro Bowl, and let's face it, who watches it? But, a really wild ending to the NFC Championship game where the Seattle Seahawks played the, Green Bay Packers. Now, I was pulling for the Packers, okay? Something about the Seahawks, they're a little too arrogant, and I want them to kind of get shot down a little bit. Although I do enjoy Russell Wilson. I think he's a fine, fine player and damn good quarterback. He's going to wind up doing some amazing things. But there's something about Green Bay. I've always liked Green Bay a little bit. That kind of hurts some of my friends' feelings. But, hey, they'll get over it eventually. But, again, I was pulling for the Packers. They came out in the first half and looked great. Second half, they looked like they couldn't get out of their own way. It was absolutely atrocious. But the game ends in overtime. Russell Wilson hitting Jermaine Kearse for a 35-yard touchdown. Ends the game. Jermaine Kearse gets excited, throws the ball up into the stands. Well, this guy catches it, and let's see, what was his name? Looking through the thing. We're just going to call him Shelton, because that's all they seem to have. Oh, Scott Shelton, there he is. He catches the ball. Now, dude is unemployed, has a couple of kids, he's two kids, and going to jail. In a couple of weeks. As a matter of fact, he's going to be going to jail the day after the Super Bowl. So, this guy catches the football. He's offered $20,000 by a sports collector. Well, I don't know about you, but $20,000 helps a guy out. You know what I'm saying? $20,000 makes a whole lot of difference. And I can't say I would have turned it down. But Scott Shelton did. He said, let's see, he balked when he received the call from Curse. Oh, this is, they're talking about, he said he wasn't going to give the ball up, that Jermaine Curse was the only person he would give the ball to. But, so Jermaine Curse reached out to him, offered him a team-signed helmet and his game-worn jersey in exchange for the football. This guy sits there and says, "Well, I want a trip to the Super Bowl as well." Don't know how wise that is because, listen, you do have to be back in Seattle on that Monday just because you are going to jail. It doesn't say in any of the articles that I've read why the guy's going to jail, and I mean, and really not our business per se, but in a story like this, guy wants to know, I mean, did he do something stupid? I mean, there's a million different things he could have been, but this guy's sticking to his gun, saying that he's not going to give this ball up to anybody other than Jermaine Curse. Again, though, you were offered $20,000. You're going to go to jail for a few months. I get what you're trying to do, and you're trying to do, you're doing a cool thing by saying you're only going to give it back to Jermaine Curse in exchange for some paraphernalia, some memorabilia, that kind of thing. But this 20 grand set your family up, man. Jail is what you really got to think about. Again, I commend you for wanting to give the ball to the player. I mean, again, huge, huge moment for Seahawks fans and the Seahawks in general. But these guys are getting paid millions, and you're unemployed. And let's face it, anybody who's working in the private sector, you're not making that kind of money. Most people have to work half a year to make that kind of money. So how you turn this down is completely beyond me. But this guy does it. So just trying to read a little bit more into here. He later indicated he might instead save it for his son. Also, which again, that's fine. You want to save it for your son, but now you have to go through the process of getting it authenticated, and so you have to get the certificate of authenticity, and you got to bring it to a place like Steiner Sports, which is nationally recognized. But again, I'm just trying to read a little bit more here, and nothing really else on this. But I don't know, man. I don't know. This guy's apparently had a of brushes with the law. But again, there's something to be said about the coolness of wanting to do that and say, hey, I only want to give it to the team and the players, and eventually he's probably going to wind up in the Hall of Fame kind of thing. But I don't care, man. That 20 grand makes a world of difference. Absolutely makes a world of difference. But there was that. That happened in the NFC Championship game. The AFC AFC Championship game, which was later on that day. It was just a terrible, terrible game, man. The Patriots wound up winning this game 45-7, beating the hell out of the Colts. The Colts looked completely overmatched. And in the first half, it looked as if there was some potential. The Colts could possibly pull this out going into the second half. And then they just got absolutely annihilated afterwards. But, of course, it is the New England Patriots, and it always seems like when the Patriots do something well, there's always controversy around it. Now, we go back a while, and most people remember Spygate, where some of the Patriots coaching staff was caught recording the New York Jets' defensive signals during practice so they would know what was being called. This was something that was always done way back when. That's why you look at these signals and you have two or three guys calling them in, but only the quarterback knows who's calling in the real signals. And all these teams do it. Baseball does it. You see the guy, the third base coach, sending signals down to the batter, and he's rubbing his cap, brushing his shoulder, rubbing his nipples, grabbing his crotch. Nobody knows what it means except for the hitter. Again, you don't know what the dummy signal is and things like that. Then you go and you hear guys like Aaron Rodgers, who was using New York Bozo, as a call on the line. Everybody was like, "Well, what the hell is New York Bozo?" And Aaron Rodgers came out and said, "Ah, it's a dummy signal. I have no idea what it means. We just kind of made it up." But in this particular game, apparently, the New England Patriots come under scrutiny because they are the home team, so they are responsible for the balls. And some of the balls were deflated. In the NFL, they have to be deflated to a certain level. I don't remember exactly what that level was. We'll take a look. We'll keep an eye out for it as we go through it. But they were 2 PSI below what they should have been. Now, a lot of you are thinking, well, 2 PSI, well, how much of a difference can that really make? It makes a big difference. It came out that back in 2003, the quarterback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers had to pay the guys in the Super Bowl to have the ball altered. He altered all 100 balls. There are 100 balls that are used in the Super Bowl. And they're not all used, but, they use maybe 36. And even that sounds like a lot, and it is. But every quarterback has their preference as to how they like the ball. Some like it rough, some like it softer, this and that. It has to be a certain level. Now we go back to, I believe it was 2006, where Peyton Manning pushed for the quarterbacks to be able to handle the ball before the game and make sure it was feeling right and, kind of get a feel for it. So when they went on the field, they'd be able to, be comfortable. So before the game start, there is an official that has to check out the ball and make sure it weighs the right amount and there's proper PSI in the ball and things like that. So this was all done before the game, apparently, and everything was fine. Now, whether or not they do each and every ball, I don't know. Maybe they grab a couple, whatever the case is. If they only grab a couple, then the Patriots got lucky. So there was a point where during the first half, a referee didn't like the way a ball felt, threw it back to the ball handler, told him to put it off to the side. Brought a new ball in, everything was fine. Comes out after the game the next day that these balls were deflated. The 2 PSI below what they should have been, which affects the way a quarterback throws, affects the way the receivers catch. Again, it doesn't sound like much, but in the intricacies of football, it means a lot. So during the second half, apparently, during halftime, some things were rechecked and everything seemed to be fine. And then the Patriots came out and went all gangbusters. I mean, again, the final was 45-7. The Colts couldn't do anything right in the second half. Now, everybody's sitting there saying, oh, well, you know, that made all the difference. It apparently didn't. Because if it really would have made that much of a difference, the Colts would have played a better second half, just as the Patriots did. The Colts came out and they were just completely overmatched in this game. It was disturbing. It was 100% disturbing. So now you have everybody chiming in, and there's a lot of questions to be answered. And, you know, again, because it's the Patriots, everything's magnified. Now, I am not a big fan of the Patriots personally. I don't really care for them. There's some, I guess there's some anger to them because they've been so good for so long. I wouldn't want to see them fail. You know, as far as I'm concerned, they could put the Giants in the Super Bowl any year and I'd be happy because the Giants seem to own them in the Super Bowl. But, again, you know, Tom Brady could go down as one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game. He's starting his sixth Super Bowl, which is going to be a record. But now everybody's coming out saying, well, who's responsible for these balls being deflated and things like that? John Madden came out and said, well, it's Tom Brady. He comes out and he's telling everybody that, you know, Tom Brady's the one who's responsible. And the quote was, when asked about it, you know, about the deflated balls and why it would have happened. He goes, that, you know, that, according to Madden, that would have to be driven by the quarterback. That's something that wouldn't be driven by a coach or just the equipment guy. Nobody, not even the head coach, would do anything to the football unilaterally, such as adjust the amount of pressure on the ball. Without the quarterback not knowing, it would have to be the quarterback's idea. You know, and Bill Belichick had come out and said he knew nothing about it before this. And then they asked him, you know, do you believe him? He said, yeah, I believe him. You know, he goes, I can see, and you hate to make examples of what you see because it sounds like you're accusing someone, but I can see that being between the quarterback and the equipment guy. And again, go back to 2003, and I'm trying to see, Brad Johnson, there he goes, they mentioned him in the article also, from MSN Sports. You know, he said it. He said, you know, I had the ball scuffed. You know, and they went on to beat the crap out of the Raiders. You know, the quarterback is responsible for this. You know, he's the one that gets to handle the balls and things like that. And when Brad Johnson said he did, he said he slipped the equipment guy $7,500. $7,500. And Brad Johnson went on to say, you know, I paid some guys off to get the balls right. I went and got all 100 footballs, and they took care of them. John Gruden, who was the coach of the Tampa Bay Bucks at the time, denies any knowledge of this. And again, this is something the quarterbacks handle the ball, and not the coaches. So coaches don't know about that. And I can completely see that. But, you know, a lot of quarterbacks prefer the ball to be overinflated and things like that. A guy like Aaron Rodgers apparently likes it underinflated. When asked about that, Madden went on to say, I've never heard of that one. You learn when you're a kid that it's harder to handle a football or a basketball, to grip them when they are inflated too much. And conversely, it's easier to grip when they're underinflated. I'm sorry, I meant to say it the other way around. They like them underinflated. Aaron Rodgers likes it overinflated. Now, I've handled some sports balls in my time. And, you know, overinflated, it is harder to handle. You know, you don't get that comfortable grip, you know. But, again, it is what it is. Now, you got to keep in mind, too, it's a little weird that this wasn't caught earlier in the game. Because on every play, the ball is handled by two officials. You know, it comes from the ball boy to one of the lines, they call it a wing official. John Madden calls it a wing official here. And then it goes to the spotting official, which is the guy who puts the ball down pre-snap. So, you know, these officials should have felt this beforehand. How it wasn't noticed, I really don't know. But it goes on to talk about how John Madden, you know, back in the 70s, they had an idea to make the ball more visible because lighting wasn't as good back then, where they painted stripes on the ball. So when they did this to see the ball better at night, in the evening time on night games, the paint on the edge of the balls kind of made it harder for the quarterbacks to grip it, and some guys didn't like it. So they came out and they would scuff the paint off on one side of the ball. Well, during the 70s, the quarterback for the Oakland Raiders was Ken Stabler. He was left-handed, so it didn't work for him. So he had to do the scuffing on the other side of the ball, and, you know, they went on, they did this, and they went on to play a game, and because of things like that, the NFL decided not to use those balls anymore. Now, Bill Belichick was finally asked about this, and he gave a very Bill Belichick answer. And this is coming off of Pro Football Talk on NBC Sports. And his quote was, "I think we all know that quarterbacks, kickers, and specialists have certain preferences on the footballs. They know a lot more than I do. They're a lot more sensitive to it than I am. I hear them comment on it from time to time, but I can tell you, and they will tell you, that there's never any sympathy whatsoever for me on that subject. Zero. Tom's personal preferences on his footballs are something that he can talk about in much better detail and information than I could possibly provide." He goes on to say, my overall knowledge of football specifications, the overall process that happens on game day with the footballs, is very limited. I would say that during the course of the game, I honestly never, it is probably, it probably has happened on an incomplete pass or something, I've never touched a game ball." He's really kind of throwing Tom Brady under the bus here, saying that he wouldn't know anything about that. But again, it's something that really would only happen to the quarterback, and the quarterback would be responsible for this. So Tom Brady goes on and he defends himself, obviously, you know, I wouldn't do that, this and that. And again, you know, because he's Tom Brady, and because the Patriots have been caught cheating in the past, you'll find it hard to believe. Now, again, I'm not a Patriots fan. I don't like Tom Brady. I know people that worship Tom Brady. Think he's just like God's gift. And let's be honest, everything the man's accomplished in his career puts him in an elite status. Tom Brady's been the quarterback the starting quarterback for the Patriots for, I believe, 13 years. And in those 13 years, they have made the playoffs all but once. And I think the only time they didn't make the playoffs was when Tom Brady actually wound up getting injured in the first game of the season. He, I believe it was broken ankle or something like that. He missed the entire season. And even still, the Patriots went on to play very well. That's when we got our first introduction to Matt Cassel. And they went on to play very well. They almost made the playoffs. They actually got beat out by the Jets in that particular season, if you can actually believe that. again, though, they've been caught cheating in the past. Sometimes it's really kind of hard to believe that when something like this comes up, that they had nothing to do with it. You know, who do you believe at this point? Do you believe that the ball boy did it intentionally? Did it by himself? Did the equipment manager do it by himself? Or did Tom Brady really have something to say and said, hey, you know, this is what we're going to try to do. And if we get caught, I'm Tom freaking Brady. I can talk my way out of it. You never know. It's going to come out. But again, I mean, this whole NFL season started off with controversy. It's apparently going to end with controversy. when the rules committee meets in the postseason now, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of talk about making changes to things like this. Again, you know, what are you really going to change? Are you going to change it where, go back to where the quarterbacks can't handle the balls? I mean, Peyton Manning, another legendary quarterback who can't get over the hump in the postseason. You know, he pushed for this rule, and they got it approved for him, you know, and it made every other NFL quarterback happy. You know, I can't see them changing the rule, you know, to where the quarterbacks can't handle it anyway. Obviously, there's going to be a change to it as to what the change is going to be. I don't know. You know, is there going to have to be an inspection at halftime also? Again, I don't know. But out of the 36 balls that the game was handed, they took 12 of them. 11 were underinflated. One is a coincidence. Two is a little shady. 11, you got to be fucking kidding me. But with that being said, I am flirting with the half-hour point, so I am going to take a quick break, get my thoughts ready for the next segment, and then we'll go on from there. You're listening to that awful podcast on morelikeradio.com. We'll be right back.
The Nerd Hour.
Tattoos and touchdowns.
The Elvis and Albert Show.
It's time for Dutch and Royce. Get ready.
You're listening to Hippo Juice. It's all about
the Elvis and Albert Show.
Hippo Juice.
Orange Radio.
It's all about me.
Hey, you. Yes, you guessed 10,542. Change your username. And while you're on the More Like Radio live page, listening to fine quality programming, notice the banner ad just slightly above the chat room? It's a link to something you want in Amazon. Click it. It's probably reminding you to order something you need from Amazon.com. Don't leave MLR and type the URL like a sucker. Just click the link, and it'll open in a new window. This way you can buy your shit and continue listening to the show. Now, change your username. It's right there on the right, stupid.
Antisocial Gamer Radio.
Hi, this is Ashley, host of Antisocial Gamer Radio, telling you to come listen to my show every Tuesday at 9 p.m. UK time, 4 p.m. Eastern on morelikeradio.com. Every week, I like to talk about all the latest stuff going on in the gaming world, what's been coming out, what's new releases, all the topics that you like to hear. I'll be talking about it every single week.
Oh, hello there. I didn't see you come in. This is Mitch, producer of Dutch and Royce. I just wanted to take a quick moment to remind you why we are better than you.
I took the turkey baster and put it in the glass and sucked up as much pee as I could. I took the turkey baster, after lubricating it in my asshole, and put it up as far as I could in my asshole, and I was repeatedly thrusting it in and out while jacking off and screaming out a boy's name and moaning to make it feel like it was real.
I can't believe.
I then imagined in my head him screaming, "I'm coming!" And I squeezed the turkey baster ball, shooting all my pee into my hands. I kept taking the turkey baster out and filling it with more pee and shooting it deep into my asshole, making it feel like it was a huge come.
Listen to Dutch and Royce live Tuesdays from 10 to midnight, only on morelikeradio.com.
They're wacky, they're zany, they're a little bit crazy, they're missing the redneck, but that's okay because they're still here. That's right, the Sully Show. Sundays, noon to 2, right here on morelikeradio.com. Make sure you tune in, check out Dumbass of the Week, the Best of Craigslist, and more. You never know, might even have a special edition of the Redneck News. That's right, the Sully Show, following Tattoos and the Touchdowns, new to two on Sundays on MoreLikeRadio.com.
MoreLikeRadio.com. Because mean people need to laugh, too.
All right, and we're back. That awful podcast, MoreLikeRadio.com. Mondays from 4 p.m. to 5, sandwiched in between Papa's Basement and the Cut Print Film the Cut Print Film Podcast. I don't know why that was so difficult for me to say. So, I kind of went back to my roots a little bit. We spoke a little bit. Spoke for damn near half an hour talking about football. So now we're going to delve into some other things. I want to show you guys that I am multi-talented. I'm more than just a pretty face. You know, a little bit more than just sports. I know what tickles me, what entertains me. And there's a story coming out of England. And apparently a woman took her child to a McDonald's in England. Let's see, where exactly in England was it? Tamworth, England. Maybe Ashley on Antisocial Gamer Radio can tell you a little bit more about the geographic location of it. But she brings her daughter, 4-year-old daughter, into McDonald's, gets some chicken McNuggets. Apparently, Emily, which is the little girl, decides that she really wasn't that hungry. So, mom's name is Nikki. She decided that she was going to take a bite into this. Now, when she bites into this, and they have a picture on it, picture of it, it's from the Huffington Post. You can find it in the Weird News section. Weird News is some of my favorite news, honestly. She bit into it and saw something suspicious. So Nikki went on to say, "I'm very fussy about what I eat, and when I saw what was in the McNugget, I went white. I'm just thankful Emily decided she didn't want it. She didn't want her Happy Meal. One good thing that has come out of this, though, it's turned me off processed meat. I'm eating a lot healthier now." So what she found in this chicken McNugget was a worm. She found a worm in the chicken McNugget. Now, I'm actually pretty happy my wife's gone up to bed by now because she was sitting in the next room up until the break there. She would have been, you would have heard her retching as I read this. So, you know, what baffles me is how restaurants handle situations like this. Okay. Nikki went on to say, "It looks like a worm, but I can't swear it's one until the tests have been carried out. Whatever it is, it shouldn't be in there." You're damn right it shouldn't be in there. It's a goddamn worm. Come on, man. That's just awful. Now, again, going back to the way restaurants handle this, the way they always handle this is they sit there and say, "Oh, we'll give you a coupon," or "we'll give you free food." No. No, 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 no. I find something like this in my food from your establishment, my intent is to never come back. Why in God's green earth would I find a worm in a chicken McNugget? Now, it's even worse for a chain like this. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't eat McDonald's enough that it's making a break on them. Okay? Me not going to McDonald's if I were in this situation, they're not going to be affected. But, you know, my intention is to never come back. And not only will I not come back to your particular establishment, I'm going to boycott a chain like this altogether at that point. I mean, I'm thankful I've never found anything in my food like that. I'm a fat guy to begin with, so, you know, it actually may be good for me if I did. You know, maybe get me to eat better. But why do you offer me this? Why? What makes you think that I'm going to want to come back? It's a goddamn worm in my chicken McNugget. What if my kid ate that? Now, don't get me wrong. Kids eat weird shit. Okay? And, you know, for those of you who don't know, I have two kids of my own. My daughter's 5, my son is 3. You know, to my knowledge, they haven't consumed anything weird like that. But, let's face it, we all knew that kid growing up. You dare him to eat a worm, he ate a worm. You know, pulled it up off the ground, stuffed it in his mouth, and swallowed it. You know, I knew a couple kids in school, and they would eat bugs, like cockroaches and things like that. Pick one up, boom, swallow it. And what do? You sit there like, ew, that's disgusting. Oh my God, I can't believe you did that. What's wrong with you? You know. But as an adult biting into what you would hope would be something tasty and a little treat for yourself, like a chicken McNugget, and finding that repulsed. Absolutely repulsed. But again, it is what it is, but I don't know. But now Nikki's going to go on to some healthier living. And with healthier living comes tighter pants. And when I say tighter pants, I'm referring to yoga pants. First thing I want to do is I want to personally thank the creator of the yoga pant for doing so. Don't know if it's a guy, if it's a girl, whatever the case may be. God bless you. You have made women's asses look 100% delightful. Well, women that have the right ass for it. But apparently there's one particular woman, Veronica Partridge, who is a Christian blogger. She was wearing these for a little while, and now she's decided that she's not going to. Because, apparently it's her religious belief. Now, you know what yoga pants are and leggings are. And when I'm saying you, I don't mean you, the listener, right now, unless you happen to be Veronica Partridge. In which case, how you doing? But you know what yoga pants are, and according to this picture that I'm looking at, she's a very attractive woman. You know what they are, you know what they do. Where were your religious beliefs when you made the initial purchase and put your first pair on? Maybe your religious beliefs weren't there when you put the first pair on, but you put them on again. Where were your religious beliefs then? And you wore them for a while. Where were your religious beliefs through all of this? Okay? So, she said this is a decision that's weighed heavy on her heart for several months. And she's not going to wear them. So, it doesn't inspire lustful thoughts in men. Okay. Apparently, I mean, from what this sounds like, there was a discussion between her and her husband, which her husband sat there and said, you know, it's hard not to look. And when he goes somewhere filled with women wearing the yoga pants and the leggings, he goes, I try not to, but it's not easy. Well, of course it's not. If a woman's wearing something like that, and women, listen, I'm not discouraging you from wearing them, but I'm telling you now, men look. We do. If you got it there, you know, if you have a nice ass, men are going to look, especially if you're doing something to accentuate it. Okay? It's nature. I know women that look, and I'm not even talking about lesbian women. Straight women will sit there and go, wow, that woman's ass looks nice in those pants. Yeah. I mean, let's face it. A woman's not going to go out and buy yoga pants who hasn't seen another woman and go, wow, that woman, her ass looks good in that. Maybe it'll make my ass look good too. It's the way it works. Okay? Now, Veronica here is 25 years old. And because of her husband's comments, she's not going to wear them anymore. Good job, jerk. You know, it goes. The article goes on talking about not wanting people to gawk at you was perfectly reasonable desire. However, Partridge's decision sounds like it stems from her own discomfort. Okay. They take a little snippet out of her blog here. If it is difficult for my husband, who loves, honors, and respects me, to keep his eyes focused ahead, then how much more difficult could it be for a man that may not have the same self-control? Sure, if a man wants to look, they're going to look. But why entice them? Is it possible that the thin, form-fitting yoga pants or leggings could make a married or single man look at a woman in a way he should only look at his wife? Yes. I'm answering that. Absolutely. Okay? Listen, again, if you're doing something to accentuate something, we're going to look. Okay? Now, I'm not condoning anything where a guy's going to start gawking or catcalling or saying something, you know, that makes a woman uncomfortable. That's inappropriate. That's creepy. Okay? But if I'm looking, yeah, you know, wow, I wouldn't mind grabbing that or something like that. I'm not going to walk up to him and do it, obviously. You know, I have some self-control. But, again, you know, you're not wearing this to... Yes, they're comfortable, and I get that, you know. But you're accentuating a body part that, you know, men enjoy. They like to look at. It's going to happen. You know. And, again, I don't want to condone terrible behavior. It doesn't give permission for a man to walk up to you and grab your ass or try to do something, you know, even worse to you. That it doesn't do. And anybody that would do that is a freaking creep. But, you know, so she goes on to say, after spending a couple of weeks without the leggings, her conscience is clear, and she feels she's honoring God and my husband in the way I dress. Now, again, in this picture that they have here, again, very attractive young woman, thin. She's wearing a shirt that's a little form-fitting. Now, that shirt is form-fitting. Some people could find that sexy. Are you not going to wear that now? Because some people might get a lustful thought. Kind of goes along the same lines, at least in my opinion. So, you know, you got to take these things into consideration. You know, if you're not going to, you know, you don't want to accentuate your ass by wearing these leggings and yoga pants and giving men lustful thoughts, you have to think about the shirt you're going to wear. And you know, she's not wearing anything low cut apparently here. You know, but the shirt is form fitting. You're showing off your figure. Again, people might find that lustful. Now you're giving men lustful thoughts. Because maybe they want to know what you feel like, what they want to see more, things like that. And again, not okay to touch. But based on your justification that you don't want to cause lustful thoughts in men, you have to take this into consideration too when it comes to what else you're wearing. But that's just me. So apparently it's drawn mockery and anger from people who feel her stance is ridiculous. But again, there are plenty of people who do share these feelings. So, I mean, if you go throughout the country, apparently leggings are banned in middle schools and high schools and things like that. So they don't distract the male students. Listen, junior high school and high school, you have pubescent boys becoming men, that's all they're thinking about. You know, that's all they're thinking about. You give them, you drill a hole in a wall. If there were holes drilled in a wall in a locker room, these guys are going to be like, yeah, I'm sticking it in there. I want to see what happens. You know. But I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Speaking of sticking dicks in things where they don't belong, I'm going to pop on back over to jolly old England, where a British man, Paul Bennett, has been busted for trying to have sex with a mailbox. Let me say that again. A British man, Paul Bennett, has been busted for trying to have sex with a mailbox. This was reported by the Manchester Evening News. So, he apparently pulled on his pants in the Shoals precinct shopping arcade in Wigan on September 9th last year. He started to inappropriately touch himself and then rubbed his crotch against a letter drop. Oh yeah, let me tell you this too. Paulie Bear, 45 years old. So apparently, this isn't entertaining to me. Apparently he had his hands held in the air and repeatedly screamed out, "Wow," before pulling his pants back up and swinging on a nearby lamppost. People walking by decided to call the cops, and rightfully so. It's just freaking weird. Apparently, he decided to expose himself again. This time, after the police arrived, he was arrested with two counts of indecent exposure and using threatening and abusive words with abusive behavior. He pled guilty to the allegations, and he was ordered to go alcohol treatment. Oh, see, it doesn't say that earlier in the article. Apparently, he was intoxicated. Pay $75 to the woman who witnessed his antics and register as a sex offender. How awkward is that? You wind up on the sex offender list because you were having sex with a mailbox. That just completely escapes me. Number one, I've never found a mailbox attractive. Number two, I don't quite get why you would really want to do something like that. But again, based on his sentence, I'm going to assume that alcohol was a factor. But the British this week are apparently a wacky bunch. So Paul Bennett having sex with a mailbox in front of people. You would think he would do something like that at home. You know, maybe you buy one, bring it in, put on some Barry White, maybe some Teddy Pendergrass, get the mood going, dim the lights, light a candle. And you'd probably want to lube up too. I can only imagine that there'd be some chafing involved if you didn't. But, you know, fuck your own mail slot. Don't, the one used by the public, I mean, and then let's think about it. What if this guy blows his wad in there, gets on somebody's bills, the mail collector comes by shortly thereafter, it's still kind of soggy. Ew, what the hell is this? Actually, that thought kind of makes me giggle a little bit. But, I don't get it. Sex with a mailbox. That's a new one for me, folks. And I know some people that have some really weird fetishes. But, head on over to our last little bit for the week. The world's first 3D printed apartment building was constructed in China. This is coming off of CNET. 3D printing has become somewhat of a very popular thing lately. I mean, I've looked into it. These 3D printers are pretty freaking expensive, but they do some really cool stuff. So one company in China has quietly been setting about getting the job done for architectural companies. In March of last year, company Winsun claimed to have printed 10 houses in 24 hours using a proprietary 3D printer that uses a mixture of ground construction and industrial waste, such as glass and tailings, around a base of quick-drying cement mixed with a special hardening agent. I don't know about this, man. Obviously, 3D printing, you're not using paper. So, that's kind of a good thing. But Winsun has gone on to prove that it's possible by building a 5-story apartment building with 1,100 square meter, that's 11,840 square foot villa, complete with decorative elements inside and out. And they put it on display at the Suzhou Industrial Park. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly. If I didn't, I do apologize. But this is just a model. They're talking about how they said 10 meters wide, 40 meters long, 6.6 meters high. Oh, no. So this is it. It's 20 feet high? No, that doesn't make sense. It's 4 feet between floors. But they haven't, the company hasn't revealed how large it can print pieces, but based on photographs on its website, they're quite sizable. A CAD design is used as a template, and then the computer uses it to control the extruder arm and lay down the material. The process saves between 30 and 60% of construction waste and can decrease production times between 50 and 70% and labor costs between 50 and 80%. In all, the villa costs around $161,000 to build. So they built a 5-story apartment building, which, I mean, again, it's not, you know, we're not talking like a major apartment building like you would see, you know, being on broadcasting from New York. I can only reference really New York. But it's not going to look like on one of the projects you'll see where it's, you know, Stapleton or Rochdale or anything like that. You know, this was a 5-story apartment building, probably something you'd see more along the lines of like Brooklyn in the Ridgewood area, East New York kind of thing. Biggest problem here, though, is you're going to wind up taking jobs away from people. You know, these guys that build these houses, you know, it's going to be less for them to do because now there's still going to be some need for them because, let's face it, there's not a 3D printer big enough to spit this out by itself. You're going to have people put them together and however many pieces it's going to come in. I would only imagine it would look like kind of like a giant jigsaw as you try to do it. But how much of this how long are you going to be able to stay in this? I mean, is this something that's going to just kind of erode and fall apart within 5 years, 10 years, 10 weeks? I don't know. You know, I mean, at least for now, it doesn't look like anything like that's going to be making any changes in the world we live in immediately. You know, there's still going to be regular construction going on, wood, steel, screws, nails, you know, aluminum now because all the studs that they put in the walls are aluminum, sheetrock, mortar, that kind of thing. But this is kind of interesting. I mean, a 3D printer, they were able to print out enough pieces to build a 5-story apartment building. And they were able to decorate it inside. That's really kind of wild. That's really kind of wild. And I'm trying to look at the pictures here to see what it looks like. Let's see. Let's take a look at this picture right here. This looks like it would be the entryway. And it is. Yeah, this kind of looks like something you would see in Brooklyn, where it has like the wrought iron going up the stairs and it looks like wrought iron. I would imagine it's really not, because it was done by a 3D printer. Looks like they got some, looks like what looks like a wood floor, but again, you know, it is what it is. I'm assuming these are electrical outlets, so real. Can't imagine you 3D printing electrical wire and having it work properly. But, I mean, it's kind of sizable. And this picture here is showing some, what the pieces looked like that they used to build the apartment. That's some pretty wild shit. I ain't gonna lie. I mean, it's not even it's not a bad looking building either. It looks very clean, and it would be deceiving as a building as you could. It looks like there were cinder blocks and brick used on the outside. But again, you know, what's the sustainability of this? You know, am I going to be able to live in this? You know, I don't know, man. I don't know. But it's some wild shit. Nice to see. But with that, I think I've droned on for long enough for you guys. So I do want to thank you again for listening. Again, That Awful Podcast is on morelikeradio.com. Working on a few other networks. Hopefully we get picked up, expand our listenership. But you can hear me now exclusively on morelikeradio.com on Mondays from 4 p.m. to 5. And then that's followed right by the Cut Print Film Podcast. Check those guys out, talking movies. Other shows you can check out. You check out Dutch and Royce on Tuesdays. And then on Wednesdays, you check out My Time Now, and then followed by Hippo Juice. You also check out The Sully Show on Sundays from noon to 2. All these shows are live, by the way, for the most part. Check these shows out. By the Way Podcast with my boy Punchy. Check him out. He's on, I believe, it's Friday nights. You download his podcast also. Very entertaining. The Cousin Joe Show, Conti and Kenny. Trying to think. Again, there's so many shows on this network. I really can't keep track of them all. But those are the ones that highlight my week. I listen to all those shows. Check them out. Check out all the shows on morelikeradio.com. Head on over to my Facebook page, facebook.com/thatawfulpodcast. Follow me on Twitter, @thatawfulpodcast. No, you and awful. It's that, AWFL podcast. Hit me up on Google+. I'm also starting a YouTube channel where I'm going to be able to put all the shows I do, make them into a little video form, put some pictures up there. Nicey, nice, cute. All right. But with all that being said, I'm going to bring an end to this show. Maybe go to sleep, see if the wife's still awake, if you know what I'm saying. And I'll see you all next week. All right. Again, guys, thanks for listening. It's been a pleasure. I'll see you in 7 days. We'll be right back.